The first case today is number 20-1170, United States versus Kevin Jadiel Figueroa Roman. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please go to the podium and introduce herself on the record to begin.
Before you begin, I just want to welcome to the bench Judge David Hamilton, who's visiting with us from the Seventh Circuit. So welcome, Judge Hamilton. I think it's his first time in Puerto Rico. Okay.
Good morning. And may it please the court, my name is Siri Fried, and I am here arguing on behalf of the appellant, Kevin Figueroa Roman. With the court's leave, I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Thank you very much. This court should vacate the 108-month sentence that was imposed by the district court because the sentence was procedurally unreasonable, even under the demanding error. Standard plain error review, which we concede applies in this case. There were two important and fundamental errors committed by the court that rendered the sentence unreasonable. Hard to know which one is more fundamental, but they're both very fundamental. One is that the court failed to explain with sufficient specificity what case-specific facts of this prosecution or of this of the facts surrounding the sentencing justified such a large upward variance from the guidelines in this case. The guidelines, as calculated by the probation department, were 70 to 87 months. The sentences recommended by the parties were considerably below that. The defense counsel recommended 63 months.
Now, just a minute, you're conceding that there was no objection, correct?
I am conceding that.
And so are you in all four prongs of plain error, or are you here to stress one in particular?
Well, I believe that the facts show, if the court agrees with our assessment of those facts, that the prongs 3 and 4 are shown by the failures of the earlier prongs, that is, the great failure to explain the sentence does impair the integrity of the proceedings and the reputation of the court. And I believe that language is actually, this court talked about that in a fairly recent case of Munoz-Fontanez. And here what the failure to explain was, we had a fairly high offense level that was calculated as a result of, there were four separate crimes to which Mr. Figueroa Roman pled guilty, each one carrying an offense level of 26. Because the grouping rules did not apply, because it was a carjacking case, the offense level jumped up to 30 before acceptance of responsibility and then was brought down to 27, and he was a first offender.
Can I just understand the argument that you're making on this score, because I think it may run us into the second ground that I assume you're going to be raising, which is, you're not saying that we don't know what factors were relied on, because you identify one of the factors that was relied on that you think was problematic, which is the convicted felon.
Well, yes, that's certainly one of them, and I can address that one now, but yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is that the court listed a number of facts of the case that it did not peg to an explanation for why those particular facts justified a sentence that was so far above the advisory guideline range.
But he did identify the factors that were supporting the variance. I guess if there's a gap, the gap is that he didn't explain why that high a variance. Is that the idea?
Well, in our view, these were the facts that the sentencing transcript shows. He talked about victim impact. There were certain facts that he talked about that would be mitigating in nature, such as the defendant's lack of a prior record, his youth, his family background. He then discussed other things and actually most of this, Your Honor, is really found in the statement of reasons rather than actually.
But he has that paragraph independent orally where he lists various things, including the convicted felons.
Yes, that's correct. Well, okay. There was no factual basis in this record.
Okay, so let me just take you to that, and my colleagues want to circle back to the first point.
Okay.
With respect to the convicted felons point,
part of this, yes.
I take it, as I read the government's argument, they're not arguing that there's any basis for in the record for thinking that the other persons were convicted felons at the time of the offense.
Yes, I agree. The government is conceding that there was no factual basis for the finding that the client, that Mr. Roman was knowingly associating with convicted felons.
Okay, and so is your contention that it is clear and obvious that the fact that they were convicted felons, two pieces of it. One, that the district court was saying they were convicted felons at the time of the offense, not in consequence of now having been convicted.
Yeah, I think it's clear that the court was saying that it was justifying the higher sentence because Mr. Figueroa Roman chose to associate himself at the time of these offenses with convicted felons.
Okay, and then
that raised...
And then secondly, you're saying it's clear or obvious that that was a piece of what led to the variance.
It is certainly a piece of what led to the variance, and there was no factual basis for that specific piece. But there were also...
Do you agree that the guideline calculation did not account for the fifth and sixth carjackings?
The guideline calculation accounted for four.
So the answer is no.
Yes, but I do want to take issue...
Counsel?
I'm sorry.
Do you want to take issue with whether there were five or six?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do.
With the there's indication in the PSR it was not disputed that Mr. Figueroa had physically assaulted one of the jurors, correct?
Well,
is that correct?
No. I would say that because the PSR also indicates that when Mr. Figueroa was interviewed by the pre-sentence report writer, I believe it was, that he denied actually having physically assaulted anyone.
Has he denied that under oath or in the sentencing process?
He did not deny it during the sentencing hearing. That is, he did not speak during the sentencing hearing. I believe that that denial came during the course of his interview with the probation officer during the preparation of the pre-sentence report.
How do we handle that?
I believe what you have is a pre-sentence report that essentially... it doesn't give anybody a preponderance of the evidence to believe that one of those assertions is more valid than the other. You have a self-serving statement by a co-defendant who was also going to be sentenced in this case, placing blame for a physical assault on Mr. Figueroa Roman, and
It was nonetheless objected to, so there was no honing in on the discrepancy that was in the police report from one version to the other.
There was no honing in on it. The court made this.
But I'm saying the defendant ahead of time didn't object in sentencing.
The defense counsel did not object.
Yeah.
The defendant himself took issue with whether the truth of that statement during his interview with the pre-sentence report.
I did at least a quick ballpark estimate of the guidelines, and with a fifth carjacking with an assault, the guideline range would actually rise well above the sentence imposed by this judge.
I haven't done that calculation, although I could. I do want to say a couple of things about the disclosure of that participation in the fifth, and I do take issue with whether or not there was a sixth. And it's clear from this record that Mr. Figueroa Roman was attempting to cooperate in this case. That is, he subjected himself to...
You can finish the thought.
All right. He subjected himself to interviews with law enforcement, hoping to help himself during the sentencing process of this case. And so this information he voluntarily disclosed. With regard to what Judge Sosa took to be the sixth, the facts that are set out in the statement of reasons about that make clear, or I think it's fairly easy to read that, is Mr. Figueroa was not representing himself to have been involved in a sixth carjacking at all, as he simply saw one take place.
Just one final question, just so I get your take on this.
Yes.
In order for you to win, even if the record shows that there was reliance to some extent on the co-defendant or the four people being convicted felons at the time of the offense,
yes,
to justify the variance, we still have to determine whether that ultimately affected the sentence such that you could show prejudice, or at least under the fourth prong. In light of the fifth and sixth, the evidence of the fifth and sixth carjacking, and the fact that the statement of reasons, as I recall, the judge does not refer to the convicted felons in the statement of reasons. What supports the conclusion that if there was error in relying on that fact, that justifies vacating the sentence on plain error?
Well, I think he mentions that during the course of the sentencing hearing, which I think we can infer that it meant something to him because he bothered to mention it. And the statement of reasons is a post hoc document, but we don't, again, the statement of reasons doesn't tell us to what degree he relied upon any of these things in order to arrive at the sentence that he arrived at. It's not simply that there was a list of factors that could be taken as aggravating. There has to be enough in the record for this court, as a reviewing court, to be able to understand how the district court calibrated, weighted these factors in order to arrive at a sentence that was so far outside the mine run.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, if counsel for the appellee would please introduce themselves on the record to begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Gabriela Barrieri on behalf of the United States. District Court did not commit plain procedural error when it imposed the variance sentence in this case. As an initial matter, Figueroa's claims of error are waived for failure to develop argument as to all four prongs of plain error review. But even if not waived, the appellate record is clear that the district court relied on three main case-specific factors to impose the variance.
Well, what about the associating with felons? It's also clear that the court mentioned that in sentencing, and that wasn't true at the time.
Yes, Your Honor. So
what are we
as
to
that,
what how are we to know what weight the court placed on that in its sentencing determination? What do we do with it?
Well, two things. The first is that that finding cannot be clear and obvious error because Figueroa's reading of that finding is not the only possible reading of that statement. The court could have been referring to the fact that Figueroa and his co-defendants decided to engage in a joint crime spree that resulted in felony convictions rather than existing convictions at the time of the carjackings. This would be a reasonable response to Figueroa's statements in the PSR that he committed crimes out of impulse and ignorance, even though they weren't isolated. It wasn't an isolated instance.
What would be the sense of, because the reference is to the fact that is there any indication or any finding that he's going to associate with these people afterward?
Well, nothing in the record says that he will associate after, and we don't know what will happen, but the record does say that they were all friends from the neighborhood.
Right, so it would be one thing if he said that, okay, you hung around with friends. That concerns me. But that's not what he said. He said you hung around with convicted felons, which would make some sense if the idea was that I'm concerned by your behavior because you were hanging around with people who you knew were convicted felons. But if it's just that you were hanging around with people who now are convicted felons, that's a reason to vary. I don't understand.
Well, it was one of the multiple reasons.
Yes, that's just Judge Thompson's question. If it's one of the reasons, how do we know that it didn't affect the amount of the sentence?
Well, we know from the statement of reasons when the court had the opportunity to confirm what its sentencing rationale was for varying upwards, it did not mention that fact. Instead, it said that it was relying on the fact that
we look at the statement of reasons. Our case law says we can look at. Our case law is pretty clear that the sentence comes from the bench, and it's what the judge says in open court that we rely upon. In trying to make a determination as to what the court said, first of all, is the sentence and what justifies the sentence.
That's correct, Your Honor. But here, the court can also infer from the oral pronouncement at sentencing, infer and also take from the explicit explanations of the court what the court relied on. The court also relied on the fact that the carjackings took place in a short period of time.
No, it's clear that it didn't rely only on it being convicted felon. But the question is, given the range and given the extent of the variance, how do we know that his misunderstanding it, that they were convicted felons, didn't affect the amount of the variance. How could we know that?
Well, first, as I mentioned before, it's not clear and obvious error that he misconstrued the record. He could also be having referring to the fact that they were convicted felons at the time that Figueroa was sentenced. By the time that Figueroa was sentenced, the district court had already sentenced one of his co-defendants, and all other co-defendants had pled guilty to felonies. So it's not clear and obvious. And second, he relied and gave much more emphasis during the balancing of the 3553A factors to the other factors that on which he relied. And he stated in the statement of reasons and in when he ties in at sentencing, when he ties in the section 3553A factors.
Here's the paragraph. The paragraph is, the court's balance, Mr. Figueroa's lack of a criminal record, the pro-social support he enjoys with his family, with the seriousness of offense, their violent nature, the psychological impact caused to the victim, and Mr. Figueroa's association with convicted felons when assessing his risk to the community once he is released. Seems like it's just one of five things that it mentioned.
Yes, but we know that at least for the psychological impact of the victims who thought the gun was a real gun instead of a pellet gun and they feared for their lives, the court mentioned that three times. Twice during the balancing of the 3553A factors, and again in the statement of reasons.
Counsel, I take it your principal point, though, is that what the judge said was just not all that specific, and there was no objection raised where the matter could have been cleared up at the time.
Well, the government's position is that the court was specific, but yes, there was no objection at the time for the court to further explain what it meant by the seriousness of violent nature and what weight it was put on that versus the convicted felons association.
But I think you also saying it wasn't clear whether he meant by convicted felons now as opposed to then, and therefore, since there was no objection, that could have been cleared up too. Is that the idea?
That's correct. Yes. I want to address some of the points that appellant's counsel brought up. First, the plain error review. The government's position is that the arguments are waived because she failed to address all four prongs of plain error. I believe the counsel was referring to the Supreme Court's case in Rosales-Mireles, which says that proof of a plain guidelines error that affects the defendant's substantial rights is sufficient to meet the defendant's burden on the fourth prong of plain error review. But here, Figueroa failed to address the third and the fourth prong as to all claims of error, and Figueroa was not challenging the district court's guidelines calculations, rather, he's claiming procedural error based on adequate explanation and support for the variance. And also, the guidelines range did not take into account the other carjackings. And finally, Figueroa never specifically denied the co-defendant's statement in the PSR that he hit one of the victims in the unindicted carjacking. What he did say was, and I will quote, when talking about the, during the law enforcement interview, Figueroa stated that he did not know why he committed the carjackings and that they did not hit the victims. Yet he said this right after saying that he participated in four carjackings. But from his own admissions, we know that he participated in more carjackings. Therefore, taking the statement in context, the court could reasonably infer that Figueroa was only talking about the four carjackings for which he was indicted and was not talking about the carjackings for which he wasn't. That statement also did not just appear in the PSR where the probation officer described the offense conduct. It appeared again in the PSR under the section for reasons to vary. Yet, Figueroa never objected to that statement. And unless the court has any questions, the government will yield its time back to the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please reintroduce herself on the record? She has a 2-minute rebuttal.
you. Again, it's Attorney Siri Freed on behalf of Mr. Figueroa Roman. I wanted to respond to the discussion that took place about the group of factors that was sort of recapitulated by the court just before it imposed sentence, where it was listing what would be mitigating factors and what would be aggravating factors. And the government counsel talked about the psychological impact of victims. One thing I just want to point out is that the carjacking guideline itself incorporates the presence, the fact of victim impact in its own setting. That is, carjacking is a crime that, by definition, assumes the presence of a victim. That is, it's a crime that takes place with a victim present, and therefore it has a high guideline. It's under the robbery guideline, but it comes up higher because of the series of enhancements. That is, there's the 20-point base offense level, and then it gets jumped up for, there's a separate two-level enhancement for carjacking itself, and then there are other separate enhancements for whether or not a dangerous weapon is used or brandished. And so that brought the guidelines itself were aggravated because there was aggravated conduct. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that to the extent that the court was trying to use victim impact as a separate aggravating circumstance, it did not explain why the victim impact required a sentence even higher than what the guideline range called for.
Before you close, can you just address the contention that the reference to convicted felons is not clearly or obviously a reference to them being convicted felons at the time of the offense as opposed to at the time of sentencing?
Yes, and I think really the best way to look at that is to actually look at the words that came out of the district court judge's mouth, which is at page 30 of my record appendix. And the court says, if the court will allow me to read this into the record, the court, meaning the district court judge, has balanced Mr. Figueroa's lack of a criminal record, the pro-social support he enjoys from his family, with the seriousness of offense, their violent nature, the psychological impact caused to the victims, all of those factors.
I'm asking just one very specific thing. The reference to is association with convicted felons. How do we know that's a reference to them being convicted felons at the time of the offense, rather than being unclear as to whether he's saying they were convicted felons at the time of sentence?
I'm trying to answer that question by putting the whole context of what he says. Those other factors that I just read before he gets to the one that you just asked for all talk about what the status of everybody was at the time that these offenses happened, not at some point later when they're facing sentencing. They're talking about his lack of a criminal record at the time, which is obviously at the time of the offense, the pro-social support that he had the benefit of as a teenage boy at the time he committed these offenses, with their seriousness at the time that those offenses happened, the psychological impact caused to the victims at the time they suffered from what happened to them during the course, and his associated with convicted felons. I think it's very clear that when you put all of those things together, he's talking about not some future fact that happens at the time of sentencing.
His final words, though, were, when assessing Mr. Figueroa's risk to the community once he is released.
Yes.
It's possible to see that as just saying, well, his friends are now all convicted felons. They're going to be released eventually. What can we expect?
Well, I guess I would say, Judge Hamilton, that to try to put my arms around the question posed by Judge Barron, because it's an important question about what the judge was about, what the district court judge was relying on at the time. He's talking about that maybe what their status is now and what may happen at some point in the future, but not what was going on at the time in terms of the judgments made by Mr. Figueroa about whether or not he was choosing to associate himself with felons at the time that he committed these offenses. It's very clear from the facts in the pre-sentence report that set forth that Mr. Figueroa was associating not with people that he knew were dangerous felons, but with but the other kids that he'd gone to school with, that he was hanging out with his friends, and they all did these bad things that turned them into felons, but at the time, they were not that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this first case.